Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Let's jump in here. So, Jake, you are not in the United States. You are in
nope.
Britain right now. And we are going to be discussing your grandparents' farmhouse, which you say was located in Wales, correct? And
yes.
What is, you know, as much background as you can give on this location, you know, how long did they have the place? Who built it? Whatever information you can give before we kind of jump in here to these experiences of yours.
Yeah, definitely. So where do you start with the farm? Originally, it was a blacksmith's. It was built as a blacksmith's in the 1700s. So it's got like a really long history. And at some point, someone decided to put a chapel next door. And so we literally can step over a fence and we are in a graveyard. It's an incredibly old graveyard. Everyone who's ever lived in that area, or at least up until sort of like the mid-1900s, is buried in that graveyard. So there's a lot of like really local people there. And then as it started off as this sort of little stone cottage. Upstairs was living quarters and downstairs was sort of like the blacksmith shop. And then what is now the kitchen and in the farmhouse used to be the stables where you'd keep the horses when he was sort of shoeing them and maintaining the hooves, I suppose. So over the years, it's been owned by, oh gosh, I couldn't tell you how many people have owned it. A fair few. It's changed hands a lot. And my grandparents have owned it for, I believe it's about 32 years. It was 29 years last time I asked, and that was a good few years ago. So it's got to be about 32 years they've owned it.
And they're still there right now?
They are still there now, yes. I still go and see them all the time. Yeah, it's a really nice old, well, I say old house. It's ancient, really, by most standards, I think. Probably not by a lot of the buildings in the UK standards, but by most standards, it's a very, very old house. And it sort of shows its age quite well in the older side of the house. Over the years, they've extended it a lot. When they moved in, it was still the original sort of building that was. So up until sort of the 1980s, it hadn't really changed much. And then when they bought it, they put an extension on. So they put two bedrooms upstairs, converted another room, and then eventually put a fourth bedroom on as well. Put like a downstairs sort of living room, which my nan affectionately refers to as the best room, which is where you only get to go to at special times of the year. But yeah, it's like a really cool old house. And you can tell over the years as they've added stuff to it that it's just kind of grown into a really nice family home.
The best room. I like that. So that's when you get out the fancy dishes, right? And when it's time for those parts of the year.
Yeah, that's like the Christmas time of year. That sort of time for that room, yeah.
When did things start? At least when, you know, what and what age were you? Of course, I want to learn that as well. As how early did this kind of stuff begin, and what were some of the first things that you noticed, or did anybody talk about anything before you even noticed it?
No one ever talked about it. I spoke with my nan about it quite recently, just to find out if she'd ever actually experienced anything. And the only thing she's ever experienced was she saw the ghost of a black cat. It's the only thing she's ever seen. She said she just out of the corner of her eye saw a cat run across the doorway. All the cats on the farm are all farm cats, so none of them are allowed in the house. So Nan went looking for the cat to put it outside again, and she couldn't find anywhere. So she said that's the only time she's ever seen anything in the house. And that was 5 years ago. But I'm 28, and my first ever memory of anything ever happening in the house that was weird, I was probably about 5 or 6. And that was, we used to sort of sleep at my nan's a lot. It was sort of like a big sleepover thing at the weekends. We'd all go, like me and my little brother would go and stop at my nan's fairly regularly. And we'd sort of be able to go out on the farm and sort of help out a little bit and just be outside and explore and in a relatively safe environment. But I remember waking up one night, and we used to sleep on like this little fold out camp bed. And we used to be we'd sort of sleep on the floor next to my nan and granddad's bed. And I seem to always remember feeling scared in what was our room. So whenever I slept there on my own, when I was at that young age, I never really wanted to stay on my own. So I remember being on the floor in this camp bed next to my grandparents' bed. Something grabbed the end of the sleeping bag and started to almost roll it up on me. It was like I was pinned, my feet were pinned to the bed in it. And I just remember waking up and screaming, absolutely screaming. And my nan and granddad both sat bolt upright in the bed and were like, what's wrong? And I was like, something's got the bag. And it was literally just like, it just looked like I'd sort of been twisted up in the bag. But I can specifically remember feeling the weight of something pushing down on the bag. And sort of that's the first ever memory I've got of something really happening that couldn't be explained away as just, oh, you've just sort of twisted around in the bag. It was literally like something had full on grabbed it and was trying to pull it off. So that's the first ever memory of something like that happening. And I do remember I didn't stop there for a while after that. That kind of put me off a little bit of stopping at my grandparents' house.
And I know that you were very young, but do you remember your grandmother or grandfather saying anything about that incident?
No, it wasn't spoken about after that. It was sort of like, oh, you're fine, don't worry, go back to sleep. Sort of pulled the sleeping bag back into place and then got back in bed and went to sleep. It wasn't sort of, they dozed off again. My granddad started snoring again. And
right.
I just sort of lay there trying to decide whether I was safe or tucked into the sleeping bag or sleeping on top of the sleeping bag. To be honest with you, at that point, I wasn't overly comfortable being in the bag. I was really worried that something was going to try and do it again, and I'd feel really claustrophobic over it. And I just remember being really scared that night and not really sleeping. And then I didn't really go back for a long time after that. It must have been at least 2 or 3 months, which is really rare because I'd be there almost every weekend.
And did your parents and did your grandparents figure out that's why you didn't want to go back?
Not that I remember, no. They'd ask, do you want to stop? And say, oh, no, I'll go home. And it took my little brother stopping there with me again for me to actually stop again. But nothing, I don't remember anything else happening after that for a long, long time. It must have been at least another 3 or 4 years before anything else I can really think of happened to me again. But it was just that one moment of, oh, that was really scary. I didn't like that. And that really put me off. But once I started stopping there again, no, there was no issues really. Again, it was just sort of never spoken of again. But that is just like the first ever thing I remember happening to me.
Yeah, I don't blame you for wanting to take a little break there. I don't know why these things find it so damn funny. Well, I guess I do, but because it's very effective. Yeah, but they find it very funny to screw with people when they're sleeping.
Yeah, I think when you're sleeping, I think it's probably when you're most vulnerable. It's when you, obviously, like they talk about you being in REM sleep and things like that, and I think it's when you're most susceptible to these things actually being able to interact with you. I think that's when they can physically get to you the best. I think it's probably why they do it. You're the most relaxed, which is probably when they're like the most capable of actually interacting with you.
And see, Jake, that's yet another reason to want to become a vampire so you never have to sleep.
Oh yeah, never sleep. Don't sleep. Sleep's not good. No, that's unhealthy. That is for this.
Pry those eyes open.
Yeah.
So what then was the next thing that you can remember happening?
The next thing I remember happening was all of us kids. There was four of us at the time. So it was me, my brother, and my two cousins. And we all used to, at this point, my grandparents had put bunk beds in one of the bedrooms. So that was like the kids' room is what it was called. It was where all the toys were. It was where the beds all were. And we could all be in there and play and be out of the way for a bit when we needed to be out of the way, when we weren't outside playing. And I remember we went to bed one night. It was quite late. I remember just sort of being in bed and everyone else, we kind of talked ourselves to sleep every night. We'd sort of laugh and joke and tease each other and just fall asleep. And I remember just sort of being right on the very edge of sleep. I felt all of a sudden the room went very cold and everyone else was asleep. I remember sort of saying, guys, guys, and everyone else was just sound asleep. And all of a sudden, my bed sheet was grabbed directly above my stomach, went up in like a teepee and flew off of me. And I sat there frozen to the bed. I didn't know what to do, whether I should move or whether I should stay still. I was absolutely in shock is the only way I can describe it. I just remember sitting there going, what the heck was that? And I just remember I was frozen with fear, absolutely terrified at that point in time. That was one of them moments when you sort of go, that wasn't normal. And that was it. And I just sort of rolled over on the bed. Eventually, after lying there for about 5 or 10 minutes, I rolled over on the bed and looked over at where my bed sheets had landed. And they were like over against the other bunk beds on the opposite side of the room. So they'd like properly flown like 3 or 4 feet across the room. And I sort of crawled out of bed. I remember just crawling on the floor, grabbing the sheets and getting back into bed and pulling them up over me. And I held on to them for dear life until I fell asleep again. That's the next thing I remember happening.
And to be able to do that from a position where you're completely laying down and to be able to toss them that far, it would be a difficult feat.
Yeah, it was one of those moments when I was really like, I mean, it was summertime, so they weren't heavy sheets. I remember it being sort of, I think, May, end of May, early June, I think, because it was coming into when we'd sort of be getting ready to start sort of preparing to do the hay. And I always remember that being a very busy time of year and we'd all be sort of dragged outside to help do things and get everything ready. So I remember sort of everyone was there for that particular reason. So it was a summertime. It was quite warm in the house. So yeah, that's like, so it was very light bed sheets though. And it was, so I don't know how hard I've never sort of tried to chuck them across the room, but I couldn't imagine it had been very easy to get that sort of distance on them. But it was literally just like grabbed in the middle, up and thrown across the room, and it sort of landed in a crumpled heap over by the other beds. Yeah, that's the most scared I think I've ever been in that house. I've never been that scared again in that house.
And so far, the theme is coming through pretty strong that things were kind of centered around you.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why, it always sort of chose me. I don't know whether it was none of the others believed it or none of the others. I don't know. I couldn't for life of you tell you why it was me. I don't know. It was just no one else has ever seemed to have been bothered by it other than me. I mean, there are things that people have witnessed happen in rooms with me in them that are really weird. but there's nothing that's ever happened to anyone other than me. So after that, I did go to sleep eventually after that. And I did next morning, I told my nan what happened. And she sort of said, oh, the bed sheets must have just sort of slipped off you when you're falling asleep. And I was like, oh, no, I was definitely awake and they definitely did. And she was, oh, they couldn't have done. And sort of later on, when I sort of asked her about it, was when I was a bit older, I just didn't want to scare your cousins or your brother. She was like, but she said, nothing like that's ever happened. No. She did say that she'd sometimes get a really funny feeling in the rooms, like the room would all of a sudden go quite cold and she'd feel like something was watching her. But she never actually said she'd seen anything. My granddad just, nope, never seen nothing. Don't believe it.
And what about your parents? I mean, did they spend a lot of time there, and did they ever mention anything?
My mum and my uncle, they moved there when they were in their teens. Mum sort of said sometimes she feel a bit weird in the house, but she never been uncomfortable, never felt threatened in the house, never seen anything happen other than around me. And my uncle he's one of those really chill, laid back kind of guys. And if something ever did happen, I don't think it'd ever bother him at all. So no, I don't think he ever really figured anything had happened. But I know where he slept in sort of his room. It's in like the oldest part of the house. And funnily enough, nothing ever happens there. I've slept in that room many a time and nothing ever happened to me in that room. It's always fine in there. I never felt weird, never felt uncomfortable, never felt afraid. That room was always fine.
So mostly just the parts where your grandparents had put the additions on.
Yeah. That was where most of the stuff happened, which is what I find quite weird about it, is it, you think it'd be the old part of the house, but no, it's the new part of the house that this all occurs in.
Maybe it's whoever it is, doesn't like the additions. So that's why it was kind of centered around those parts.
It could be, or it might just be that it really likes the additions and it decided to stay there.
That is true. It could be the exact opposite. Yes, it loves the additions. It's like more room to spread out.
Yeah, I can explore more. I can go and do more stuff. And then I'll just torment this one little kid.
I was just going to say, it really was just looking to torment you and torture you.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did like me. So yeah, that was like the next big thing I remember. And then after that, little things would sort of happen that I'd never... After that, nothing really fazed me much in that house. After that, I'd go upstairs on my own, and because the house runs on the water heater. So we used to get, if Nan wanted hot water, she'd say, oh, Jake, go upstairs and turn on the hot water. So you'd have to go upstairs into like this part of the house that, you know, didn't like me too much, and turn on the hot water and sort of go back downstairs. And I always remember being absolutely terrified of going up there on my own. And I'd kind of creep up the stairs and open the door really slowly on the landing. And I'd sort of just sort of look in there and I'd be like, it's just there, just there. Go. And I'd creep in, flick the switch and run as fast as I could, slam the door behind me and run down the stairs. And they're like, what are you running for? And I'd sort of say, it's nothing. Just getting done quick. Sort of. And she always knew why I was doing that thing, but she was never too, she never wanted to put much, didn't want to give it anything. So any attention, I think, was the thing. She didn't want me to feel more scared in the house. I think she just wanted me to be like, it's nothing. It's just your imagination kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's natural as parents to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so.
Now, what are these? You said there was weird things that would happen in rooms that you were in while other people were there. What kinds of things would go on?
Just things like things would fall over on occasion. It was just like little things that you could sort of say, oh, that's just a coincidence. Like a cushion would fall off the sofa. People are like, how did it fall off the sofa? It was leaning against the back of the sofa and now it's on the floor. How'd that happen? Things would move in rooms. You'd be like, I'm sure I left that there. And you'd be like, anyone move this? No, not touched it. And you'd be like, I'm sure that was over there. And it would be like complete opposite end of the room on like on the table or something, you'd be like, that wasn't there earlier. Who's moved that? And everyone would be like, I haven't touched it. Wasn't me. You know, no one would have touched it. And just things like that, you know, little things that you'd be like, well, what's going on? Why is it doing this? Things that you couldn't prove anyone else hadn't done, but at the same time, everyone denied it through their teeth kind of thing. They were like, nope, was not me. We didn't touch it. You must have left it there. And I'd be like, no, I definitely didn't leave that there. So just that sort of stuff, really. I mean, a little bit later on, a lot of things happened that were kind of like, yeah, no, something's definitely going on. But up until that point, it was just little things like that that sort of occurred that you couldn't quite say was anything sinister, but you're definitely like, that wasn't me. And I definitely didn't put that there or didn't do that. Or so, yeah, that was kind of the thing, the little things that would sort of really make you, things that make you go, really, I think is the way to put it.
And what about Mr. Fred? When does he come into things? Or, you know, should we talk about, the male voices first? Or
I think it's all Fred. Everything that's going on is Fred. And we sort of named him later on after a particular event. It was kind of like a jokey name we gave him.
I definitely want to hear this event.
I think you will. So what happened with that was my nan, me and my brother, whenever we slept at my nan's, we were always really chatty and we'd take the mick out of each other and we'd laugh a lot and mess around when we were supposed to be going to sleep. So we'd sort of be like in the same room, we'd be sleeping and we'd be laughing and joking and talking. And my nan would get me like, you need to go to sleep now. It's late, go to sleep. And we wouldn't, we just keep winding each other up and taking the mick. And so eventually my nan used to do this thing where she'd creep into the bedroom, knowing full well it would freak us out. It pitch black, couldn't see a thing. She'd creep into the room and stand at the end of the bed and look at us. And you could see she was there, but when you're sort of like quite young, you were like, no, don't like that. And we'd try and kick each other out of the bed to turn on the lamps that were next to the bed. We would sort of like be kicking at each other, trying to make the one fall out of the bed to turn the light on. Because it would just really freak us out that she was doing it. And then one night, I was quite a bit older. One night, I remember I was lying in bed. I was sleeping there on my own. I was helping on the farm. And I was sleeping in my room. I was probably like 12 or 13 at the time, maybe a little bit older, 14. It was summertime. I was sleeping on the farm, sleeping in my own, in the bed. And the door opened. I was half asleep, but I remember the door opened. And I opened my eyes and looked at the door. And I sort of watched the door open. I watched someone walk in and the door closed behind it. And I was like, I just watched them. And they walked around the end of the bed. And I watched them walk down around the end of the bed, around, and sit on the bed next to me. It was a double bed at this point. And they lay down. And I thought it was my nan coming in to say goodnight or something. And I rolled over to say goodnight. And there was no one there. The bed was empty. But there was very clearly an imprint of a body on the bed.
Mm.
And I looked at it and I just went, good night, and rolled over and didn't give it any more attention. I was just, good night, and rolled over and sort of very quickly fell asleep that night, funnily enough, considering that had happened. But I did very quickly fall asleep. And the next morning, I got up and I told Nan. And she sort of said, well, no one came in your room. I was like, I know no one came in my room, but there was someone in my room. And she said, well, no one came in. And I said, well, it must have been Fred then. And that's how he got his name. And we just sort of named him Fred. I said, it must be Fred. And Nan was like, who's Fred? I said, it's the ghost. And Nan was like, okay. And that was kind of it. That's how we gave him his name. We just called him Fred. And after that, whenever something weird happened, we'd go, oh, Fred's up. Fred's around. And that's how he got his name. That's how we called him Fred. It was just to sort of humanize him a little bit instead of us feeling like it was this terrifying thing. We thought if we humanize it, it's not as scary.
Right.
We've taken a bit of the, I've taken something away from it, and the fact that this, it's this anonymous thing. I've removed that away from it and I've given it a name. Now I've personified it. It doesn't become such a threat, I think, was kind of the attitude with that. I think at the age of 13 or 14, that was the attitude I took.
No.
And plus it was a funny name. So
Fred. Right. It would take the scare of it to name him something like Fred. He's cool.
It's just Fred.
Except
Fred
sometimes Fred's he's a you. Little bit of an a-hole because he's pulling on blankets and the whole thing with him coming and laying down next to you. And isn't it amazing though, what our brains and bodies can do when it knows that I can't deal with this right now. So I'm just going to turn over and go right to sleep. You know, you didn't lay there that night. Like that wasn't the scariest night of all. And isn't that incredible because he came in and laid right next to you.
Yeah. That's the thing is that should have been the most scary experience I had, but I mean, that should be the most scary experience anybody has really. But to me, that was kind of like, that was nothing compared to the bed sheets being ripped off of me and thrown across the room. That experience didn't traumatize me anywhere near as much as the bed sheets did. So at that point, it was kind of like, Fred, up your game a little bit or just give up sort of moment for me, really, as I'm not scared. That didn't scare me. I'm not dealing with this. I'm going to sleep. And I rolled over and went to sleep. And it was just sort of that moment of, I'm not going to give this to him. That's it. I'm just going to sleep. So I did.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, at this point, you're calling him Fred. Did you, at this point, going forward, or maybe before that, even before you gave him this name, did you ever talk out loud to him? Say, what do you want? Quit messing with me. What are you doing here? Anything like that?
No, I didn't. Never out loud anyway, maybe in my head once or twice I might have thought to myself, what do you want? What are you doing? But I never actually said anything. I think up until that point, it had been this frozen with fear response to things going on. I couldn't talk, couldn't think straight. Almost every time it happened, it was just scream and get help. But at that point, I was coming to the point of, I'm too old to be scared by this now. Don't give it any power. So I didn't. I kind of rolled over and just went night and rolled over and went to sleep and that was it. And that's the first time I ever spoke to it, was just when I said night and went to sleep. And I don't know if that gave it power or not, the fact that I'd acknowledged it and said good night to Fred, or whether I took power away from it at that point. I don't know whether acknowledging it would give it power or take it away. But I was definitely, that was the first time I ever spoke to it. But it wasn't the last. After that, I talked to it more whenever it did something. I'd sort of say, oh, Fred, hi, Fred. You know, and I'd maybe sort of say, oh, you're back or something like that to him after that. It was definitely one of those moments of, well, I've started this now, I've got to carry on kind of things, I suppose.
And just a couple questions about the property itself that I'm kind of stuck on, and I don't want to get off of this before I forget. I probably would. So you said there was the chapel next door, right? And then you've got the graveyard on the property as well. So was this strictly just a chapel where they'd hold funerals and weddings, or was there actually a preparatory, like a room, like a morgue almost, where they would prep the bodies and things?
If I'm entirely honest, I don't know. The chapel, as long as I've been alive, that chapel has been lived in. It was bought years and years and years ago and turned into a house. I'd love to know if they've got anything going on in there, to be honest. That'd be quite an interesting question to ask them.
Right.
But for as long as I've known, it's been a house and been lived in. The graveyard itself dates back way to the 1700s. And I know for a fact that almost everybody that's ever lived in that house is buried in the graveyard next door. So that's always been that's kind of where I thought Fred was from. I always thought Fred was sort of like the guy who'd lived in the house before my grandparents owned it. I think was kind of the attitude I took with it. But my nan sort of doesn't think, or at least when I talk to her about it, she doesn't think it's him. Because she said he was an absolutely lovely old man, as Christian as they could possibly be. and was incredibly nice to everybody. So she wouldn't have thought he'd be deliberately trying to scare a kid at night. So that was, that was kind of sort of made Fred a little bit scarier, maybe.
I mean, the fact that this property was so old and you have the graveyard where admittedly there were past tenants and owners that lived in the home and then were subsequently buried there. I mean, suffice it to say, I'm sure that people have actually died in the home. I mean, when it was, you know, just the cottage, even that would have been some things that had gone on.
Yeah, I think the original, the blacksmith who'd owned it when it was originally built, he died there. And I know he's buried in the graveyard. I just don't know what his name is to find him in the graveyard.
Right.
But I know that he is there. So I don't know whether it would be him that's there. Maybe, I'm not sure. But and then I know that there are at least another five who've lived there and are buried in the graveyard since then.
I mean, that is a very unique situation that most of us would, I mean, never even have probably the opportunity to buy a property that has such things happening, you know, where you've got this, we're going to live here and then we're going to, I mean, physically probably die in the home, especially back then. They, God knows how far they would have to travel to get to a doctor and things like that. So who knows how many folks would have passed there. And then to have the chapel and then the graveyard on the same property, that is pretty darn unique.
It is. And when you consider the size of the community the chapel was serving, I mean, it's five houses. Would have been like the original number of properties.
Wow.
There was, I think, only four farms and a cottage in the area. So, yeah, there's when you sort of get a little bit further afield, it grows.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you get out to about 5 miles out from the chapel, you're talking maybe 20 properties at the most, especially at the time it was all built in the 1700s anyway.
Right.
Was, I think the chapel was built in 1811, if I remember rightly. That number really rings a bell anyway. But no, it was it wasn't a massive area. So the graveyard's probably got, I think it might be somewhere in the region of about 70 to 80 graves in it.
That's more than I was actually assuming it was.
I might be rounding it up a bit there as well. I'd say that's the most that's in it.
Right.
At the very most. It could be close to maybe 50.
Wow.
But I know when you walk in there, it's not a creepy feeling in the graveyard, if that makes sense. It's quite a at peace feeling when you're in there. There's nothing sort of, I mean, we used to go in there quite a lot when we were kids and sort of wander in there and play hide and seek behind the graves and things.
You should have just slept in the graveyard then, Jake, and just
shouldn't
left
I? Yeah.
The house alone.
Maybe would have been felt a bit safer. But no, it was the graveyard was always, we did used to play in there a lot. My nan used to take us in there because it was, at one point it was really overgrown when it was first purchased by the people that lived in there. Now it was very overgrown. There were a lot of brambles and things in there. So there was blackberry bushes and all sorts. So we used to go in there and pick blackberries and things like that in there and make jams and things. So we spent a lot of time in there, sort of in the summertime especially, and getting on into September when the berries were all ripe, we were in there a lot. And we never once felt scared in there or anything. There was never a threatening presence in there. You know, we'd wander around for hours in there picking berries and sort of cleaning off some of the graves, especially if we knew that there was someone that was going to visit a family member that was in the graveyard. We'd sort of go in and sort of like an unspoken rule that we'd just sort of clear off the grave. So they could go and see it. And then the graveyard went into trust. And so then it was sort of paid for it to be maintained by a local gardener who'd go in and sort of cut all the grass and cut all the briars back and sort of maintains it now permanently. So at that point, we sort of stopped going in there and doing anything, really. It became less of a necessity for us to go in there.
Now, what about this male voice? Who do you think this would have been speaking? And I mean, were you the only one to hear this?
I was the only one to hear the voice. It was Christmas. The whole family were there. So my parents were sleeping in what was the room me and my brother usually slept in. My brother was sleeping in the next room along from them, which only had a single bed in at that time. And then I was sleeping downstairs while my aunts and my uncle were in the other bed. Oh, no, tell a lie. Sorry, no. My brother was in the room with my two cousins. They were sleeping in the bunk beds and he was on the single bed next to them. And then I said that I'd sleep downstairs in what was the best room, because it had the comfiest sofas. So it was quite late in the day because it'd been Christmas Day. And I was I think it's probably about 11:30, 12 o'clock when we went to bed. And I was lying, I'd sort of snuggled into the sofa and wrapped myself up in the blanket that was on the sofa and started to fall asleep. And then I remember I turned the TV off, got up and put the remotes on top of the TV and turned off the plug next to the TV, which was the instructions I was always given by my nan, was make sure you turn the TV off and make sure you put the remotes on the TV so we can find them in the morning. I was like, yeah, okay. So did that as I was told. And I rolled up and went to sleep. And then I don't know what time it happened, but I remember an almighty thud on the sofa I was sleeping on. And I woke up, rolled over and said, what was that? A voice just said, go back to sleep. It was very deep as you go back to sleep. And I did, just rolled over and went back to sleep. And the next morning when I woke up, I remembered this had happened. I looked up and looked around. And on the floor next to the sofa was the TV remote I put on top of the TV the night before. So it had either thrown the TV remote at me or picked it up and dropped it by me. And then told me to go to sleep after I'd woke up to see what had happened.
And that was the only time you've ever heard that voice?
That was the only time I've ever heard the voice.
Aren't those one-offs just so strange sometimes? I mean, just why the one time?
It is weird. I for the longest time, I did sort of say to myself, I was dreaming. I didn't hear a voice. But then I can't explain the TV remote. If the TV remote hadn't happened and I just woke up and said, what was that? And I thought I'd heard a voice, I wouldn't have thought anything of it. But the fact the TV remote had ended up right next to me, that was the weird thing for me. It was like, I definitely didn't leave that there. That was on the TV. So that was sort of the moment of that actually happened. What was that?
And what about the footsteps that you mentioned? Where in the home would you hear these footsteps?
They'd be on the landing above the kitchen. So that would have been the old loft above what would have been the stables, is that landing. So one day we were all in the kitchen. We were having breakfast. I distinctly remember it being breakfast. My granddad had gone out to start doing something. It was a very sunny day. I remember it being very hot. So he'd gone outside. I was in the kitchen with Nan and my mum. And we knew it was footsteps, because whenever someone walked across the landing, the lights would rattle on the ceiling. They'd make this very distinct rattle. And we heard someone walk across the sea, across the floor upstairs, and the lights rattled. And I was like, who's upstairs? And Nan was like, oh, it must be your granddad. And Mum said, no, Dad's outside. So I was like, so who's upstairs? And it's like, well, no one. And that was like the time we heard the footsteps on the landing.
And so they both just passed it off. I mean, they even saw the lights rattle. And sorry, I interrupted you. You said you could follow where they were going above you, but they were both like, it's nothing.
It wasn't that they were, it was nothing. It was at this point that I was like, oh, it's Fred. And that was when everyone else started calling him Fred.
Okay.
Fred. So that must have been Fred. I got really excited. I was like, that was Fred. It must have been Fred. And my mum was like, who's Fred? And I told her about all these things that had happened to me. And she looked at me really weird. Like I'd lost my mind. And I was like, it's Fred. It must have been Fred. And Nan was like, all right, it was Fred. And that was it. At that point, everyone was like, whenever something weird happened, oh, it's Fred.
So I think it's just fascinating that this used to be a little blacksmith shop to begin with. I find that fascinating. So this part of, obviously the horses are, things are going on downstairs. He's probably making, you know, horseshoes and doing all this stuff downstairs. I wonder, do you know what would have been upstairs in the loft that he would be doing up there?
That
work-wise?
Would have been the hayloft.
Okay.
I'm assuming the hayloft anyway. Right. But that would have been where he kept the feed for the horses, I'd imagine, or possibly where he kept tools, maybe materials. But yeah, it was a very weird layout. Well, I say weird, it probably wasn't weird for the time. But the way the original house was laid out was it was sort of like an L shape. So we had, there was this big stone sort of shed on the side of the house, which is now being turned into a living room. They took it all down and built a living room there instead, like a dining living room. But that was sort of the shed where he kept livestock for food and sheep and things were in there. And then the kitchen area would have been the stables, which was sort of like the little recess around the courtyard. So you had the shed shed would have been sort of on the right as you were looking at it from the road. Then you'd have had a courtyard where the kit, and then the stables would have been at the back of the courtyard. And then the living quarters were slightly up the hill on the right, but still attached to the stables, which is where the smithy would have been. And then the living quarters would have been above the smithy.
Well, how often would this happen that you'd actually hear the footsteps, not only hear them, but these lights would shake because of the walking around up there?
I heard it 3 times. I don't know how many times everyone else heard them. I heard them 3 times. Twice there was someone with me, and the third time I was on my own in the house. But yeah, it was no one's ever mentioned them other than when I've been around, because I'll pick up on them. It's like, it's an automatic, Fred's upstairs. Fred's, who's that up there? What was that? Where's granddad? Where's so? If there was everyone in the room with me and I heard it, I'd point it out. Or if there was like someone in the room, I'd go, where's so-and-so? And they'd be like, outside. And they'd be like, right, so who's upstairs? And it came a point when I'd actually run upstairs to try and see who it was. The third time I was like, no, there's someone upstairs. I've got to go and find him. I was the only one in the house. So I ran up the stairs, opened the door on the landing, and there was no one there. It was just empty. I looked in all the bedrooms. There was no one there. Knocked on the door to the bathroom. There was no one in there. It was just me in the house. So at this point, I wasn't scared of him at all. He was just kind of like, he'd sort of taken on this almost sort of a regular visitor sort of thing, and it didn't bother me anymore. Well, at least at that point, he didn't bother me anymore. But no, that was kind of like all the things that happened that I know about or I've experienced there. As far as I know, no one else has ever experienced anything. I have asked my cousins a couple of times, and they've said a few times, no, we did feel something weird once or twice, but we never saw anything or nothing ever happened. So yeah, that's pretty much like my early experiences with Fred were those.
Jake, what about when you would go home with your mom and your dad? I mean, did ever follow you? Did anything ever happen at your house?
Once or twice, I'd find things in really weird places. For instance, I remember once I had it was like the Dangerous Book for Boys or something it was called. And I loved the book. I was forever reading it. I was always trying to make the things that were in the book. And one day it went missing and I couldn't find it anywhere. And then my mum found it in the airing cupboard. And she came and said, why'd you put it in the airing cupboard? I was like, I didn't put it in the airing cupboard. And she was like, your brother must have hid it from you then. But he swore blind he didn't hide it from me. And at this point, we'd got a PlayStation and he was addicted to the thing and never came off of it. So he was like, I sort of asked him, did you move my book? And he went, nope, didn't touch it, and went back to his game. And I believed him because almost from the moment he got up to the moment he went to bed, he'd be glued to the TV screen.
Now, something that you mentioned in your email, and if this is where you wanted to go next, that would be fine. If you wanted to go somewhere else, that's fine too. But you say that you were attacked after coming to faith.
Yeah. This is where it all got very weird for me. I'd grown up an atheist. My whole family are atheists. None of them sort of, or my immediate family are atheists, I should say. So my grandparents don't have faith. My parents don't have faith. None of my cousins have faith. So it was very weird. They all found it very weird when I sort of came home one day and said, I'm going to church. But I suppose I should start from the first experience with this one. It's quite a long story, but it all sort of ties into this event. But I remember I was bricklayer by trade. So I was at work on this job and I'd realized very quickly that I'd seriously underpriced the job and I was going to lose a lot of money on it. And I was despondent and unhappy, miserable at work. And I just remember getting in the van before I went home. I sat in the van for a minute and people always say that there's no better therapy at the end of a workday than just sitting in the van for a minute and you just think about your day. And I sat in the van and I just sort of, it was a complete joke. And I just said, I don't care who does it, but if one of you gets me through this job, I'll work for you for the rest of my life. And I started the van and started driving home. And in hindsight, knowing what I know now, that was a really stupid thing to say. But I was driving home and it was about an hour and 10 minute drive for me to get home from this job. And I just remember being really, I was frustrated on the way home. And there was this particular stretch of road that was just a very long straight road. And then it was like an S bend at the bottom of the road that went over a humpback bridge and then around another corner. And you couldn't see around the corner. It literally came back on itself and back on itself again in an S. I remember coming down this straight and I all of a sudden started to feel so sick. I really thought I was going to throw up. I wound the window down in the van. I slowed right down thinking I was going to throw up. And it got to the point when I actually thought I was going to have to stop and throw up in the hedge. So I slowed down just maybe 10, 15 meters away from this corner and almost stopped. And a motorbike came around the corner, over the bridge, around the corner on my side of the road, properly leaning into the corner, full on sort of racing driver mode, I called it. And he was on my side of the road and he was coming straight at me on my side. It was that moment of we locked eyes and he had the I've messed up moment. I could see it in his face. And I couldn't have been going more than like 5 mile an hour. I just smacked on the brakes, stopped. And he flew past me and missed my wing mirror by inches. I sat there for a second and the feeling disappeared completely. Completely gone.
Wow.
I felt absolutely fine and carried on my way home. Then in the next 2 days, I finished the job and I went back to the job I'd been working on before I went to this one. I had a house for a really good friend of mine. I'd known him for years. And he was a very Christian man, very, very Christian man. And I told him the story. I told him exactly what I'd said and what happened. And he went, well, you know what that was, don't you, Jake? And I just laughed and said, divine intervention, sort of taking the mick out of him a little bit because he knew I was an atheist. And we used to, there was this little back and forward we had with each other. I mean, he was a lot older than me. He was sort of in his 50s and I was in my early 20s. But he was a very good friend and we got on really well together. And he just sort of said, well, you said it. and walked off. And I just sat there and I sort of chuckled to myself and I was like, oh yeah, that's that. I went off into the room I was working in, turned my radio on, had it going almost full blast, and he was way at the other end of the house in his office working away. And it was just niggling at the back of my head that he'd said this to me. I don't know why I did it, but I just looked up at the ceiling and I said, if that was you, give me a sign. Sort of prove it was you that did that the other day. And I stopped and went back to work. And not even 5 minutes later, my friend walked in and said, Jake, I just want to give you this. Just have a read of it and see what you think. And he handed me a copy of the King James Bible. And I just took the Bible off him, didn't even hesitate, looked at the ceiling and said, touche. He looked at me and sort of grinned and he was like, what? And I was like, I just prayed for a sign and you've just given me this. And he just sort of laughed and said, well, there you go. He said, maybe there's more to it than you think. And he could not have heard me because my music was going full blast and I was very quiet when I said it. So I just knew he didn't hear me, but he just thought he had to give me this Bible. That was it. Next weekend, I read the first sort of few chapters of the Bible that night, and I went back to work next day. And he sort of said, what do you think? I said, well, can I come to church with you on Sunday? And he said, yeah, of course you can. And that was that. That was sort of my first sort of experience with God, I suppose is the way to put it. It was a very, very strong coming to faith for me. I remember going home and telling my parents I was going to go to church that Sunday, and they looked at me like I'd gone absolutely mental. And they were just like, you don't believe in God? And I was like, well, maybe I do. I don't know. And they were like, well, why? So I explained it to them, and they were like, it's just a coincidence. And I was like, maybe. But what if it's not? So I went to church, and that was that. I sort of very quickly gained a strong faith, absolutely loved everything I was learning. I was really, really strongly into it. Within the first sort of month, I knew that I was a Christian. I knew I believed in God. I knew that God was there and he was real. I just remember feeling very strong in this faith that I went straight out and I bought a cross to wear around my neck. I remember when it came, I had this really flimsy little chain on it. I was like, I'm not wearing it with that. So I sort of took the chain off it and chucked the chain away. And I got some sort of builder's line string, and I tied that in a knot and put it around my neck and tied it on. And I was like, it'll never come off. This will never break. And I swore I'd never take it off. And one night I was sleeping at my nan's house. I was fast asleep, having a lovely dream. And all of a sudden, I was wide awake. I couldn't breathe. I felt like I was suffocating. I could feel something had grabbed the string at the back of my cross and was pulling on it as hard as it could. And I was trying to grab hold of it so I could pull it away. In my head, it was like, just pray, just pray, just pray. And I just started praying and praying as hard as I could. I was praying, and all of a sudden it just went, disappeared, gone completely. I just sat there. I was like, what was that? I was terrified again in that house for like the third or fourth time. I was actually terrified. And I just kept on praying until something in my mind was like, you can stop. I sat there and I was like, what was that? And it was like, in my head, it was just like, you're okay. It was testing you, or it was after you. And that was sort of like the feeling I got of this overpowering, like I could feel it in the room around me, but it couldn't get to me again. This anger in the room with me. But and that was sort of the first time I was attacked.
Do you feel like that was Fred?
I don't know is the answer to that question. I'd like to think it's not, but it could very well have been Fred. I just don't know. I mean, I never felt threatened when I thought Fred was around before. But all of a sudden, the entire thing took like a completely different sort of feeling again. It didn't feel the same at all. It felt very angry at me, is the only way I can really explain it.
And you said that your entire family were atheists. So I suppose that when you come back into the home and all of a sudden you've got this strong faith and belief in God and you're reading the Bible and you've got a cross around your neck now, that really must have put a target on your back from the sounds of it.
I think it did. I really think it did, yeah. That was the moment I realized that it was sort of having a faith wasn't just like, oh, I believe in God. Having a faith was, I believe in God, but that means you believe in the devil and the devil is there. You can't have one without the other. And that was a very sudden and pretty scary realization for me that all of a sudden I was like, oh, everything's not just going to be like sunshine and rainbows. There's going to be dark days as well. You know, it's a polarizing feeling, I think is what it was. But I just remember thinking to myself that, okay, if that's what's involved, that's what's involved. And through my life, I wanted to join the army when I was younger. And I couldn't for medical reasons. I wasn't able to join. But it was sort of like all of a sudden, it was just like this light bulb in my head that now you're a soldier of God and you're a soldier of Christ and you're still at war, but it's a very different kind of war. And that was sort of like one of the moments when I was like, oh, wow, this is far more serious than I ever thought it was going to be.
And what about these shadow figures that you mentioned?
They've always sort of been around. I see them on occasion just in like the peripheral vision. First time I ever saw one outside of my grandparents' house was when I was at work. I was working in a chip shop. I was just turning 18. This was before I came to faith, but I remember the toilet was upstairs and it was sort of like attached to the flat. There was a chip shop with a bar behind it, and then there was a flat upstairs. And it was sort of like the room before the flat was a sort of like little toilet area for the staff. And I remember going up to the toilet one night. I shut the door and locked it behind me. And all of a sudden, I heard footsteps walk across the floor. And I was like, hello, I'm in here. Just don't come in. And then they walked back across the floor. And I was like, oh, they've gone back downstairs. And I opened the door when I was done washing my hands and opened the door. And as I looked across the hallway, I just saw like a shoulder and a head disappear behind the doorway. And I was like, I can see you. You're not going to scare me. Because at this point in time, me and the girl I was working with had this sort of game going where we try and scare each other and see who could get the best scare of the night, basically. So I thought she was just going to try and jump out at me in the dark and scare me. So I was like, I can see you, you're not going to get me. And I walked across the landing really fast to try and catch her. And I knew she'd still be there because I hadn't heard her go down the stairs. And there's no way you'd miss them going down the stairs because the stairs were creaky as anything. And I ran to the top of the stairs and looked down. There's no one there. It was just empty. And I walked downstairs and I was like, did you just go upstairs to try and get me? And she goes, no, have you seen the queue of people in the shop? I haven't left. And I was like, okay. So it was one of the moments when I was like, so who was that? And that was sort of like one of the things where I was like, okay, so they're not just on the farm. And I don't, that was the first time I saw a shadow person outside of the farm.
And again, centered around you.
Yeah. I'm not the only one that's seen that one though. The girl who worked in the chip shop with me at the time, her and her husband used to live in that flat before they bought a house. And she said that they'd see and hear things up there all the time. She said like she'd see shadows moving around under the doors when they were like in the living room at night. They'd see like a shadow walk past at the bottom of the door in the hallway. And it was all centered around the room at the top of the stairs, which is the room that had the toilet in. That room, for some reason, was very active. I don't know why. I don't know the history of the building. As far as I know, it was only ever a it was only ever just like a storeroom. So I don't know what was going on with it. But she said things would, they'd hear knocks and footsteps all the time in there and just see shadows. And it was a very active area above the pub and the above the chip shop.
It's always a relief when someone else sees or experiences something, right? It doesn't always have to be at the same time, but even if you find out even years later that it wasn't just you, that's a huge relief.
Yeah, it is. It was a massive relief, actually. It was one of those things that I'm not crazy. People do see these, because sort of I'd never really had much of an interest in ghosts until this actual experience gave me much more of an interest. When I was like, oh, someone else has seen it too. And that was when I started talking to people that I knew had lived in that flat, and I asked them some questions. I said, did you ever hear anything weird up there or see anything? And they'd all say, yeah, weird stuff happened up there all the time. But that was like, that was all I'd ever get out of. Never say anything else. Just, yeah, weird stuff happened up there all the time.
You're like, that's enough for me. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, that was it. I was like, I know I'm not crazy, because loads of people, like, I think there's like four people I spoke to that lived in that flat. And the guy that was living in there when this happened to me, he was the guy who worked the bar. And I went in and asked him when I finished my shift, and I went and asked him if he'd ever seen anything. And he was like, oh, he said, nothing's ever happened to me, but my son's seen something once or twice. But he's like, I don't spend enough time up there anyway. So he'd literally work in the bar most of the day and most of the night and just go up to sleep. And he said, that's all I ever do. So his son spent more time in there and saw more stuff than I did, or than he did. But his son was really quite shy and never really spoke about it, spoke to anyone very much, actually, to be honest. So I never really got a chance to talk to him.
Well, let's talk of this temper tantrum you mentioned that occurred while the pastor prayed.
Yeah, that was the... So me and my wife bought a house together. When we moved in, I was suffering with night terrors. I'd wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, frozen with fear, sleep paralysis type thing. And I didn't know what was causing it. And then one night I had this really vivid dream. And there was a face directly above my face, like almost to the point where noses were touching. And it was screaming, let me in, let me in, let me in, just screaming it into my face. And I couldn't move, I couldn't say anything, I couldn't do anything. And I just stayed silent. And eventually I just wake up in a cold sweat. Every time it happened, it was almost nightly for weeks on end that I'd have this dream. And the face was really weird. It was sort of like a jet black face with like white eyes with really black, big black pupils. It had like, the best way I can describe it is sort of like, have you seen like tribal tattoos, like the Maori style tattoos on the face? It's had these white, bright tattoos on its face, just markings. And it was, I can't even describe the feeling that face gave me, but it was like utter terror. And for weeks and weeks, I sunk into like more and more of like a depressed state. And I felt like I was worthless. Like I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't getting anywhere. I wasn't good enough. And I just kept sinking into this like almost bottomless pit of despair. And all the time I was just feeling like weaker and weaker, and not like this face would come after me every night, just screaming at me, like right above me. And one day I could feel myself about to speak back to this face when I was sleeping. And I just said, no. And it stopped. And it stopped screaming at me. And I just said, no. Leave. And I woke up and it was gone. And I wasn't sort of frozen with fear. I could move. I could look around. And that day, when I got home from work, I phoned my pastor and I spoke to him. I told him what was happening. He said, well, can I pray for you now? And I was like, yes, please do. So he did. And he prayed for protection and that this thing couldn't get to us anymore. It couldn't get to me or couldn't get to my wife. And while he was praying, I could feel and hear this presence banging around me, like it was stamping its feet, and it banged on the wall and it scratched at the wall, and I could feel its just like overbearing presence around me, and it was full on, like it was having, like a child in a shop that had been told it couldn't have sweets. It was screaming and banging and kicking up a fuss, and then all of a sudden it was just bang, one bang, and it was gone. And I felt relief instantly. And when Pastor Prince finished praying, and I was like, you are not going to believe what just happened to me. And he was like, tell me. So I told him, and he said, you'll be fine. Don't worry. You'll be fine now. And so I finished speaking with him, and I thanked him, and I said a prayer for him, and then we sort of ended the conversation, and I just went straight to my wife and told my wife everything that had happened. And like it was like we prayed together and sort of sat there like, I can't believe this feeling I've got all of a sudden, that I'm like, I'm weightless almost. I feel great. I felt optimistic for the first time in months. And it was just this really amazing feeling.
And did the screaming face go away after that, and all the banging and scratching?
I've never seen it again.
Mm.
But the night after that, night after my pastor prayed for me, when I went to bed, I had this dream that I was walking, and there was this like teepee of paper, and I could hear the voice inside the paper. It was really muffled. And there's someone walking next to me, and this voice just said, really calm and really relaxed, just said, look, it can't even break through the paper. And I looked at the paper, and on the paper it was the Bible, and I could just see Bible verses and passages written on it, and I was just like, wow. And I turned to look at this figure next to me, and I woke up, and I was just like, what was that? And I was wide awake, and I was just like, oh my gosh, wow. And it was just this overwhelming peace on me. And after that, every night I've read the Bible before I go to bed. I'll read a passage from the Bible, and I'll meditate on it every night. And I'm just like, it can't break through the paper. So it was like at that point, I've read the Bible every night ever since. I keep the Bible next to the bed. I read it every night. I've never had a problem since.
So your story, though, does take a kind of a cool turn here. And I don't know the story, but all I know is that now we're going to be talking, we're going to go away from kind of more the haunting type stuff. And you mentioned in your email that you've actually seen strange lights in the sky.
Yeah, I have. Again, this was the first time I ever saw them was on the farm. One year, I think I was about 12. I really remember this quite vividly. It's one of the memories that really stuck with me from the farm, like a happy memory anyway. But there was a meteor shower, and my nan was like, this is going to be a really good idea. We're going to go sleep on the trampoline tonight. We're going to watch the stars. So we all took all the sleeping bags and all the bed sheets, took all the duvets and the sleeping bags out of the house. We put them all on the trampoline, and five of us lay on the trampoline overnight with all these duvets and blankets on us, watching the meteor shower. And it was so cool just to watch these stars shoot across the sky. And then all of a sudden we spotted, I can't remember who saw it first, whether it was my brother or me, but we saw this one light and it was just like really slowly going across the sky. And we pointed out to everyone, look at that one up there. It's going really slow. And we were all watching it and it was just kind of lazily going across the sky in just like this straight line. And then all of a sudden it just did like an S in the sky. And we all watched it do it. And we were like, what? And then it stopped and went back on itself and did it again across the sky again. And then it went back and did it again. And then it shot off. And that was sort of one of those moments where we were like, what was that? And it was sort of like, my nan was like, oh, it must have been an airplane or a helicopter. And I mean, I was young, but I wasn't young enough to go, yeah, airplanes do that. It was kind of one of those really cool moments when I was like, what was that? What did we just see? And no one could put a finger on exactly what it was. No one even said spaceship or anything, but that was sort of like really cool thing that we saw in the sky that one night.
And just that one night for that as well?
I saw one other one once with my best friend. We used to work together a lot. And we used to sort of, I'd meet him at about 5:30 in the morning and we'd go to work in his van. And we pulled up in this lay-by and I was jumping in his van. And we both smoked at the time, so we were both having a cigarette before we went to work. It was like a no-smoking rule in the van. So we were standing outside the van having a cigarette. And I just happened to look up at the sky. And it was like really clear, starry morning. It was quite cold. I remember being able, it was, I think about like only like 2 or 3 degrees. I was like, what's that up there? And I pointed to this like light that was kind of swinging in the sky. And he goes, oh, it must be like a satellite or something. And we just watched it for a minute while we were having the smoke. And then all of a sudden it kind of just started traveling across the sky. And it wasn't going fast, but it wasn't going slow. It covered some distance in like 5 seconds. It was sort of like way over on the horizon, but we could still watch it going. It's just this one white light in the sky going across. And I was like, what kind of satellite was that? And he just looked at me and he goes, mate, I don't know. He said, but I don't think it's from this planet. And we just sort of laughed and got in the van and went to work. And we still talk about that now. Like this was like 5 or 6 years ago, but we still talk about it now. Whenever we all get together, we all sort of like laugh about it a bit. And we're like, what was it? We don't know. But it's just like one of those really weird lights we see in the sky every now and then.
So Jake, in closing, it's kind of a two-parter question. Do you have anything recently or presently in your home? And when you go to your nan's house, do you still have interactions via who we're calling Fred?
In our house now, it's a little bit odd in our house. Every now and then, I think I catch a glimpse of something. But it's like fleeting, tiny little glimpse of something on like small and black on the floor. I know our cats and the dog as well regularly stop and look at like the corner of the room. And they'll all do it as well. It's not just like it's one of them. So they'll all be like, what was that? But I've got like a running theory that it's a cat or something. Because I know when we were sort of redoing our garden, we dug up loads of bones and the neighbor said like, oh, our neighbor's been here like 18 years or something. She said, oh yeah, the woman who lived there before the people you bought the house off used to bury her pets in the garden. So, I mean, when we did the garden, I think maybe we just sort of stirred something up maybe. And it's sort of just sort of every now and then I'll catch a glimpse of it at the corner of my eye.
Well, and it's interesting that you said that about 5 years ago, and this is, of course, at your nan's house, but she saw, the only thing that she ever really saw was possibly the black cat, right? That wasn't really there.
Yeah, that's a good point, guys. That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's maybe. Maybe Fred's a cat.
I don't know about that, but, you know, maybe that's just one of the things going on around you, not only you, but around the, you know, these properties. So especially your Nan's place, what a cool place. But yeah, but what about when you go awesome. and visit your Nan now? I don't know how often you're able to do that as we get older. Well, we tend to not have as much time for things like that. But do you go home and then have things go down there still, or to your Nan's, I mean?
Well, we moved about 2 hours away from my grandparents' house, so I don't see them anywhere near as much as I should now. But when we go back, no, it doesn't feel the same anymore. I don't experience anything there anymore. I don't get the feeling that there's something around there anymore. It all feels very safe and very comfortable, just like a warm family home, really.
Can you pinpoint, or maybe not pinpoint is the wrong word, is there a roundabout age that, I mean, have you ever thought about what age things kind of died down there for you?
I think it sort of died down around the time I was baptized, which would have been around the age of like 22, I think.
Mm-hmm.
23, something around there. It sort of stopped. It wasn't long before I moved away. I know that.
It was October 2017.
So there you go. That was when it stopped. So that was around the time it stopped, when I was baptized. And nothing really happened there after that, really. That was when it all sort of stopped.
Yeah, that experience of whatever that was, grabbing that string that you had to cross on, that sounded pretty terrifying, though.
That was very terrifying. Oh, that reminded me as well. When I was not long after sort of coming to faith, I remember that the guy who sort of given me the Bible, I was really close with him and his wife. And they were a lovely couple. One night I had this really sort of calming dream. I was sort of in the presence of sort of like this really calming feeling. And I just remember hearing this sort of voice. I could hear like murmurs in the background, but I just heard this voice and it was just like, "It's okay, she's with me." And I just went, "Okay, I'm glad," and sort of woke up. 2 days later, I got a phone call from my pastor and she said, "Jake, I'm really sorry to tell you, but 2 days ago, my friend's wife passed away." And she passed away the night I had that dream. And that was like a really, I think that's what cemented my faith more than anything, was that one dream. That was like the most, it was one of the hardest things I'd ever had to deal with, was losing her. Because she was such a nice woman. She was so friendly and happy, and nothing ever fazed her, ever. And I just thought, if anyone was going to go to heaven, it was going to be her.
Right.
And that was sort of like, that's like the happiest. It sounds really weird to say, but it wasn't like a sad feeling. It was a very happy feeling. Like I could feel that she was safe and she was well. And it was just, and when the pastor rang me and told me, and I just thought, I know.
Wow.
And she just said, how do you know? And I told her about this dream and she goes, do you mind if I tell him? And I said, no, tell him, please tell him. And she did. And that really helped him deal with it. But it was just that moment of like, don't doubt this. It's real. It was like that moment of, it's all true. Don't doubt. She's with me. She's safe. And don't worry. And that was sort of like the overwhelming feeling I got from it all. It was just that.
That is a powerful dream.
It was a very powerful dream. It was one of the most, I think till the day I die, I'm going to remember that. And it's always going to give me that same feeling that she was a magical woman and she was an absolutely fantastic woman.
Well, I think and people don't like to put a whole lot of stock in dreams. And there are times, of course, when there shouldn't be stock put in dreams, unless it's a situation like what you just explained. What else can you say about that? I mean, that's incredible.
I can't explain it. I can't explain that away in anything other than what it is. And it was just Christ just telling me that she's fine. Don't worry about her. Don't mourn it. Celebrate it. And, you know, she's one step closer than we all are.
That is for sure. We're all going to be there one of these days. So, well, Jake, I cannot thank you enough for, first of all, of course, reaching out to me and being willing to come on and chat with me about all of your experiences. I thank you so much for that.
No, thank you for listening, and thank you for giving everyone a bit of a voice in it all. There's not many times you can talk with people that sort of have the same sort of mindset and have had the same experiences as you, and it's nice just to talk to someone impartial.
Thanks, Jake. Yeah, I'm only one half of ITF. You know, you guys are the other half, and I couldn't do it without you. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. Spring does not become summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.